From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard Magazine. Joining us on the show today are Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. And here are the issues. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump squared off in the first of three nationally televised debates, and Clinton was widely regarded as the winner. The second debate is scheduled for October 9. In Washington, Congress, for the first time, voted to override a veto by President Obama. The measure would allow families of victims of the terrorist attacks in the United States to sue foreign governments for aiding and abetting the attacks. It was sought notably in the case of the 9/11 attacks in New York and Washington, in which families want to take legal action, especially against Saudi Arabia. The president argued the bill would interfere unnecessarily with American foreign policy. And a Dutch-led investigation implicated Russia in the shooting down of a Malaysian airliner over Ukraine 2 years ago. Well, Tom, you were there in Hofstra University in Long Island in New York for the debate. It was an unusual debate in many ways. Tell us about it.
Well, it was quite interesting, Fred. I mean, I think the conventional wisdom, which I think is actually the real wisdom, is that Hillary Clinton did a very good job. You had a kind of a role reversal here. Hillary Clinton's had a bad several weeks. Donald Trump has had a good several weeks. He hadn't made any of his celebrated gaffes, and she had done very poorly. So she needed a strong debate performance to kind of steady her campaign, and she got that. She was clearly prepared, and Trump was not. I mean, I know many of our listeners know who James A. Baker III is, former Secretary of State, former White House Chief of Staff. And Jim Baker was legendary for his preparation. Mm-hmm. He always used to say that his grandfather taught him what he called the five P's, which stood for prior preparation prevents poor performance. Well, it was a little more scatological, but that's as far as I can go on the airwaves here. But Baker's point was, if you're prepared, if you're prepared going into whatever it is, whether it's a delegate diplomatic negotiation or a debate, you're going to be better off. And it was pretty clear that Donald Trump was not particularly prepared. He did not seem to know a lot about a lot, except for trade, which I thought he was very strong on the issue of trade. But so he filibustered and he blustered and he interrupted. He interrupted Clinton three times as many times as she interrupted him. It was not a strong performance by him, and apparently the only people on the planet who thought he had won the debate were people who work for him. I mean, it was very, very lopsided. On the other hand, she didn't blow him away. She didn't knock him out of the race, far from it. So I think the bottom line is remains to be seen as polls are still being processed post-debate.
It sounded just from what I watched it on TV, of course, as I suppose Linda did.
I did.
That as the debate wore on, the Hillary Clinton group in the crowd got very upbeat and enthusiastic.
I should say that not only did I have a press credential, but I had a credential to sit in the hall. And I left after about halfway through the debate because I was watching these stick people from afar. All I could see is this woman with short hair and a red pantsuit and some guy with big hair. So I went back to the press room where watching the split screen television where you could see one of them respond while the other was speaking really gave you some insights. But what I did learn in the hall, Fred, is you're right. On many of Trump's remarks, the crowd, and not just the clearly the Clinton fans, but a lot of people were kind of figuratively rolling their eyes. They would groan or moan or they would laugh. And so it was clear that the audience did not think much of some of Trump's commentary, and I don't think much of that came across on television, which is the way most people see these things.
Linda, what was your take on it?
My take, well, I agree with Tom that it was a bad night for Trump, but in a way more stunning to me is the aftermath, that since the debate, Trump has doubled down on the mistakes that he made, and even just Thursday night, so several days after the debate, at 3 o'clock in the morning, came out with a big tweet storm dumping on the Venezuelan beauty queen again, again, calling her disgusting and telling people to go to porn sites and look at some alleged sex tape with her. I almost think he wants to lose. I mean, we know he has limited impulse control, but for him to be doing this several days after the debate, he needs more women to vote for him.
Yep.
He's winning big among men. He needs women. Hillary needs those people to turn out for her. The fear with her side is that while she is looking like she's ahead by a small margin on paper and is likely to be a little more ahead after the full polls are in, the concern is that her voters won't turn out for her. This has just been a huge, I think, a big incentive for women and others to go to the polls and make sure that Trump is not elected.
You know, I wrote a piece this week, Tom, and I asked this question. It touches on what Linda said, and that is, does Donald Trump know the difference between an issue that helps him and one that either doesn't help him or even hurts him? And I'm not sure he does. Clearly, this issue over a Miss Universe from 20 years ago that he has been feuding with, I guess. I mean, the more he talks about that, that doesn't help him. That is what you would call off message.
Exactly, off message. And it's a self-inflicted wound because it's off message on the part of the candidate. I find it inexplicable, but Trump is a pugilist. He's a combatant, and he prides himself on punching back, counterpunching.
Yeah, even when it is not to his benefit.
Exactly right. And it's this blizzard of tweets in the middle of the night that Linda has talked about. His advisors have begged him to stop this. They cannot get him to stop. I do think, however, I don't think Donald Trump lost any of his support. I think he's got about 40% of the American electorate with him. And I don't think anything he said hurt him there. The problem for Trump is you've got two extraordinarily unpopular candidates with a very high negatives. Hillary Clinton needs to attract younger voters, millennials, so to speak, who loathe Trump but don't like her much either and are looking for some reason to vote for her. And I think she attracted some of those people. How many? It's hard to say. So Trump didn't hurt himself, but Trump needs to help himself more, and he did not.
I'm not so sure he didn't hurt himself. I mean, at my house, there are people that I would call never Hillary people. In other words, they don't like Trump, but they really think he's maybe marginally better than Hillary Clinton. And after that debate, they weren't so sure.
Well, here are a couple of things that where I think he really hurt himself when Hillary Clinton talked about. She just flatly alleged that he's never paid federal income taxes, and he interjected, "That's smart."
Well, he didn't deny it.
He absolutely did not deny it, and so I don't think that goes over well. I mean, nobody likes to pay income taxes, but bragging about never having paid income taxes is probably not going to.
Well, he didn't exactly say he hadn't, but I think that was the time for him to say he had, if he indeed had.
The other moment quickly was early on when she was talking about during the Great Recession of 2008 and 2009 or thereabouts. She claimed that Trump had said if businesses go under, the housing market collapse, that would be good for him because he could pick up some properties at distressed prices and make some money. And he interjected, "That's called business."
Yeah. Well, it is. You know, great men have done that. Andrew Carnegie, that's how he got the 19th century. He became a steel magnate. He bought up some steel firms during what they used to call a panic then, a recession. Anyway,
Trump was literally correct more than once, but they weren't. They weren't. He wasn't politically correct. He was politically incorrect. So we'll see. But you're quite right. We know a lot of candidates who've had horrible first debates. Ronald Reagan, for one of them.
George W. Bush, Barack Obama.
Right. Barack Obama being the most recent, where he was just horrible against Mitt Romney, who did not get elected president. So so there's ample time for a comeback. I think the next debate is going to be interesting because it's a town hall forum where questions are asked from the audience. And it'll be interesting to see whether Trump can connect with ordinary people like that. This is going to be an interesting format. Bill Clinton, when he was running for president, really aced the a similar format.
Yeah,
town
I remember
hall
that
debate.
One. That's the one when George W. Bush looked at his watch to see, you know, when's this thing getting over?
And, is that the boxers or briefs debate?
Right.
Could you explain that? What was
so
you referring to?
A young person stood up and asked Bill Clinton what type of underwear he wore, and boxers or briefs. So that at that time, that I think brought presidential debates to a new low. But we've since gone a lot lower since then.
What about a recovery? All three of the ones we talked about, the presidents running for re-election, Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama had terrible first debates, but recovered pretty strongly in the second debate. That's obviously what Donald Trump needs to do if he's going to stay competitive with Hillary Clinton. What does he need to do, Linda?
Well, he's said he's going to take the gloves off. So after this first debate, he bragged and his son bragged about the fact that he didn't go after Hillary Clinton over her husband's marital infidelities. He said he saw Chelsea, their daughter, in the audience and couldn't go there. Next time, not so much. The danger is that he overcompensates for his perceived faults in the first debate and is equally unpalatable in the second debate. He could be too hot going after Hillary Clinton over her husband and just being super aggressive against her in a way that makes him unappealing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What he didn't do, what I think he needs to do, and see if you agree, Linda, is that he needs to raise the issue. If the moderator doesn't ask about him, raise the issues which I think he has the more popular position over Hillary Clinton. Immigration is certainly one. I think tax cuts and his economic program. And there's several others which, you know, he didn't do this in the first debate.
What he needs to do is prepare. Imagine that, preparing for a major televised debate to become president of the United States. I mean, maybe he has attention deficit disorder. There were stories that in the debate prep sessions that he had for the first debate that he lost interest in and wasn't paying attention. Well, he needs to pay attention and he needs to learn basic debate skills, such as going after your opponent's weaknesses. And if the question that you want doesn't come up, you pivot toward that topic. He didn't talk about the Clinton Foundation. He didn't talk about Hillary Clinton's ties to Wall Street. He didn't really explain his policies. He needs to memorize what his policies are and then explain them in a way that will be understandable to the public and will resonate. I think, Fred, you're right. I think that there are aspects of his policy that will be appealing to some members of the public.
We're going to have to take a break here, and we'll have more in just a minute. First reminder, you're listening to Issues in the News, coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. I'm your moderator, Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Joining me today are Tom DeFrank of National Journal and Linda Feldman of the Christian Science Monitor. And this is a reminder that you can listen to Issues online as a podcast. This program is also available for free download on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website, voanews.com. I think we've pretty much exhausted this whole thing about the debates. So, Tom, I'll let you say something more, and then we're going to move on.
Right. I'll make it quick. I think by normal standards, this shouldn't even be a close election. Trump's got a lot of problems, but he has one great weapon that he did not use well in the last debate. Millions of Americans are sick of what's called, quote, the mess in Washington. They feel like our leaders, both Republicans and Democrats alike, have abandoned them. Millions of people feel this way. And Trump, whether you love him or loathe him, he is the only person out there who can make a fairly credible argument about, I am the change. And he should have been talking about Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton have been around for 30 years, more than a generation. What do they have to show for it? If you want change, if you want to send the big boys and girls a lesson, elect me. And I think he should be... I mean, I'm not giving him advice. I'm agnostic on these sorts of things. But I think that would be a very helpful line of attack because she doesn't have much to come back with on that particular topic.
I do, too. Okay, let's turn to President Obama, who's, I think, what was this, his 12th veto that was overridden by Republicans and Democrats in Congress on a bill that would allow American citizens who have some claim to their families of victims, particularly the 9/11 attacks on New York and Washington, that they can sue foreign governments for being involved somehow in terrorism for aiding and abetting it. And it's particularly the whole group of people who want to sue the government of Saudi Arabia, mm-hmm. alleging that the government actually was involved in that in the 9/11 attacks. Linda, what did you make of this? I mean, I personally thought the president was correct on this, mm-hmm. that because this would, I mean, throws to the courts, to judges, to look at this stuff.
No, this is actually, I mean, legal experts say that this legislation is potentially devastating. In fact, that this is a very serious issue. This issue of sovereign immunity, in which now that the Congress has approved the right of 9/11 families to sue Saudi Arabia, that opens up American officials to the same thing. And
you mean they'll be sued?
That foreigners can now go to court and sue U.S. government officials, military officials, anybody over terror, you know, whatever they want.
Well, they could be families of drone.
Right, drone attacks.
Yeah.
Civilians, we know that civilians have been killed in drone attacks. What's extraordinary about this episode to me is, well, it was political. We're on the eve of an election, and it was very difficult for members of Congress to vote against the wishes of the 9/11 families. But the White House made a terrible mistake. They didn't really aggressively lobby on this bill and explain to members of Congress why it was a mistake. And so now you have the extraordinary scene of Mitch McConnell, the Republican leader in the Senate, coming out and saying, along with many other legislators, saying, oh, well, maybe we made a mistake here. Mm-hmm. Maybe we need to tweak this. Mm-hmm. And blaming President Obama for not lobbying hard enough against the bill. I've never seen anything like this.
I haven't either, Tom.
Well, I'm exactly right. The White House does not have the world's greatest legislative affairs staff, but still, Obama was very forlorn after this, and he said in a town hall meeting later that day or a day later, sometimes as a great nation you have to do hard things, and this is one where I wish the Congress had done the hard thing, because this is going to be a real problem for American troops, for American diplomats, for American business leaders. And so I think Linda is right. I believe already Republicans and Democrats, now having been on the record for a very popular vote, mm-hmm. are now going to have to, after the election, do what's sometimes called correcting mm-hmm. legislation to make this a little more palatable, mm-hmm. a little less draconian, a little more sensible. Otherwise, you're going to have a can of worms that who knows where it's going to go. And, of course, nothing will happen for quite a while in the legal area, because the legal situation is going to go on for years and years mm-hmm. and years and years. But mm-hmm. it's a very bad precedent. And mm-hmm. I think even the Republicans who voted overwhelmingly mm-hmm. for it, as did Democrats. I mean, this wasn't even a close vote.
97-1
yes.
right. in the Senate.
And one of the co-sponsors of this bill was the Senate Deputy Minority Leader, Senator Chuck Schumer of New York, one of the most reliable Obama votes there could be.
Well, he did get in, though, a loophole. And the loophole says that if there are negotiations going on, good faith negotiations going on between, say, the American government and the Saudi Arabian government, that the State Department could go to the Attorney General and he could ask a judge, or he could certify that these negotiations were going on and get a judge to say, well, you have to stop these lawsuits. You can't do that now while these negotiations are going on. We'll see. I don't know how that's going to work out. But it was overwhelming, that vote overturning the president's veto. Well, let's turn to this Russia again, who we talked about many, many weeks, and that is Russia was implicated, I thought convincingly, in this Dutch-led investigation about the plane, this Malaysian plane that was shot down over Ukraine. And what they said is it was shot down by a weapon that the Russians sent in, and then the Russians took out afterwards, and really implicated Russia. What does this lead to, Linda?
Well, it just, I think, confirms what has already been widely suspected, and that it raises the whole specter. I mean, Putin has never been more powerful. He just won his biggest majority ever in the Russian parliament. And so he's building power. The Obama administration is a lame duck. You've got John Kerry, the Secretary of State, continuing to try to woo the Russian foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, sort of make nice with them. But really, I think the Russians are kind of playing us.
Mm-hmm.
And in the meantime, they're messing with us all over the place. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's very hard to prove, but these hackers who are getting into our election systems it's a really frightening time in many ways. I mean, you had the Arizona and Illinois voter rolls were broken into. Obviously, the Democratic National Committee, private cell phones were released. We don't know that it's the Russians, but it's strongly suspected. And
right.
The danger is that Americans lose faith in the integrity of our elections.
Mm-hmm.
And, if Donald Trump loses, he's going to claim a rigged election and he can point to the Russians. And that could really undermine the faith in the American system among
mm-hmm.
American voters.
Mm-hmm. Tom?
Well, whatever happens in this election, Fred, I think the next president, he or she will be more muscular towards the Russians
mm-hmm.
because it's pretty clear. Yeah. That strength is the only thing that Putin cares
mm-hmm.
about. And Putin, fair or not, has concluded that the Obama administration has not and will not in its last 3 months stand up to him. So he has basically operated with more or less geopolitical impunity. He couldn't care less about this this Dutch report. You have to have totally suspended reality to believe that the Russians weren't behind the shootdown of
mm-hmm.
this Malaysian civilian airliner. And Putin couldn't care less, and he's basically immune to all of this. So
I think 290 people were killed, 80 of them children.
Mm.
And, of course, the Dutch are interested. I guess the plane had come from Amsterdam.
Yeah.
And
the vast majority of the people on that plane were Dutch.
Mm-hmm.
And but, I mean, the facts are incontrovertible. And, of course, the Russians love to lie. They said, no, this was Ukraine.
Yeah.
The Ukrainians did this to make us look bad.
Yeah.
I mean, so.
But, we've heard
but
that before.
Putin doesn't care. And we'll see whether relations are a little more balanced in the next presidency.
Linda, I'm going to read you one statement. This is from a piece in the website of Commentary Magazine, a conservative magazine, mm-hmm. that says this. Obama has demonstrated clearly and for 7 years that nothing Moscow can do, from invading and annexing territory in Europe to harassing American air and naval assets to displacing the United States in the Middle East as the diplomatic power of first resort, will dissuade the White House from seeking deeper bilateral ties. Is that fair?
I think so, actually. I mean, I think that Tom is absolutely right. I think that whoever the next president is, he or she will, I think, try to stand up to Putin more than what we're seeing now. We're not in a new Cold War. I think this is a different sort of very tense U.S.-Russian relationship, but it really does matter. They have nuclear weapons. In some ways, the Russians are punching above their weight. They, their gross domestic product is equal to, I think, to Italy's. So they're not they're not a major economic power,
mm-hmm.
but they have nuclear weapons, and Putin hasn't hesitated to talk about them as something that he might actually
mm-hmm.
use. Of course, Donald Trump has said the same thing,
mm-hmm.
but I think this will be a major foreign policy priority for the next
mm-hmm.
president.
You know, both Trump has criticized, Tom, we have very little time left, but has criticized for being nice to saying nice things about Putin. And, of course, Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, tried this reset with the Russians. It didn't get anywhere. So.
Well, I think that's right. The reset did not get anywhere,
mm-hmm.
But there's going to have to be some kind of a mm-hmm. going to have to be a more robust American policy towards the
mm-hmm.
Russians, no matter who the next president is.
Okay, that's all the time we have. Joining us today were Linda Feldman, Washington Bureau Chief for the Christian Science Monitor, and Tom DeFrank, Contributing Editor at National Journal. This program was produced by Anya Zalewski. Our engineers were Wagner Roberts and Thomas Blondet. I'm Fred Barnes of the Weekly Standard. Thanks for listening.